Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Willow, Alaska, the mushing capital of the world. And on the line is our co-host, Michelle, calling in from Denver, Colorado. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Not too bad. What is going on today at Denver Dog Works?
Today at Denver Dog Works, we did field trips at Lowe's. I posted a picture of a dog in particular. His name is Indy. He's here for a three-week board and train for some behavior modification. He gets a little bit nippy in tight places around new people and around familiar people. We are helping him build his confidence and learn how to handle tight spaces. And he's doing quite well. He's been here for just about 2 weeks.
So a lot of people don't understand that they can take their dogs to Lowe's, but there is a caveat to that, meaning they just can't take any old dog into Lowe's. Can you tell us about that?
Well, you can pretty much take any dog into Lowe's. What they're looking for, and the attendants today when I walked in with each dog, they wanted to make sure that I had the dog under control. In other words, the dog was on a 6-foot leash, walking by my side, not obstructing the aisleways, not becoming aggressive in any fashion. They don't want a dog that's going to growl, lunge, bark, or bite someone. So the dog has to be kept under control. If you do not have control of your dog, or you feel like you may or may not be able to control your dog, do not take your dog to any public place, whether they allow dogs or not.
So as a trainer in a pretty big metropolitan area, of course there are many dogs going just about everywhere, including Lowe's and Home Depot and the corner Starbucks and whatnot. Give us some tips and tricks about taking your dog into public. Are we using retractable leashes? Are we using treats, et cetera?
I would suggest not using a retractable leash because you cannot control your dog, as I've already stated. I would suggest possibly having a treat or two in your pocket, but not necessarily making it so obvious to the dog or to public, especially children, that you have that treat. If you're taking your dog into a public place such as Lowe's or even PetSmart, and there are going to be children or other dogs in the area, a treat or even the dog's toy can become a major distraction to a child or another dog. The other reason why I would suggest not utilizing treats all the time is because it's just not real world situation. You might run into a child that is eating, the Cheerios or something, and they drop them. Your dog's not supposed to eat off the ground, whether they're a service dog or not. They're not supposed to be doing those types of behaviors in public places.
So you are in a public place, and, dogs are going to be dogs. So what do you suggest telling dog owners about having people come up and pet the dogs at Lowe's or Home Depot or wherever they're at?
I would always suggest to people that you place your dog on a sit and a stay and indicate to the person to allow you to get control of your dog prior to them petting your dog. The other suggestion I would make to all pet owners is to take a look at your local Canine Good Citizen program. That is a great way to do some training with your dog that the entire program encompasses having your dog in public. In other words, you're training in a group setting. You and your dog learn how to properly meet and greet a person with or without a dog and a child with or without a dog. It teaches your dog how to remain under control in highly distractive places. CGC is a great program. It's been around for a very long time. I know that that's basically how you got into dog training quite some time ago, you were training Canine Good Citizen classes in a park.
And that was before, as far as I know, that was before Canine Citizen was even a program recognized by the AKC. It was just pretty much some really basic obedience commands that they eventually, you know, morphed into the Good Citizen, the Canine Good Citizen program. Can you run down the tests that are offered on the Good Citizen? I know that there are 10 of them that a person has to pass, and they have to pass all 10 before they can become a Good Citizen.
That is correct. The Canine Good Citizen test consists of 10 skills needed by all well-mannered dogs. All of the exercises are done on a 6-foot leash, not a retractable leash, but a 6-foot leash that could be leather, nylon. It could even be a chain leash in case your dog is a chewer. Other equipment that is allowed is a flat collar, a British-style slip lead, head halties, and harnesses. Choke collars, pinch collars, and shock collars are not allowed in CGC classes. Let's see. Test number one is accepting a friendly stranger. Test number two is sitting politely for petting. Test three is appearance and grooming. Test four is out for a walk, walking on a loose leash. Test five is walking through a crowd. Test six, sit and down on command and staying in place. Test 7 is coming when called. Test 8 is reaction to another dog. Test 9 is reaction to distractions. And test 10 is supervised separation.
So with those, I want to talk about two of those tests in particular. The first one is the reaction to distractions, and the second one is supervised separation. And the reason I want to bring those up is often you will hear new clients that come into most dog training schools, they will tell the trainer that their dog is trained. And often we hear that, and typically our next question is, what is he trained how to do? And the most common answers are, well, he knows how to sit and he knows how to do down. But two very important tests in this Good Citizen program are the reaction to distractions and supervised separation. Let's talk about those, Michelle.
Well, I'd like to interject because I've been teaching CGC now for 4 years, and that is absolutely correct. The biggest problem I see as well is reaction to distraction and supervised separation. But I also see a large problem when we do walking through a crowd. People just have no idea why would you even practice that? So they don't know that not all dogs like another dog coming right up to their face very quickly. But to get back to test number 9, reaction to distraction, that test is to demonstrate the dog is confident when faced with common distracting situations. The evaluator will select and present two distractions. Examples of distractions include dropping a chair, rolling a crate dolly past the dog, having a jogger run in front of the dog, or dropping a crutch or cane. In my classes, what I do when I'm training, not testing, I utilize 3 types of distraction. I utilize a food distraction because a lot of people will take their dogs into public places, as we were discussing in the beginning of the show, and I don't want a dog, you know, picking up the food of a child or anyone else for that matter. So I kind of teach them a leave it command. The other one that I do is I do roll a ball. I have a squeaky toy, things like that. So we want to make sure that we are addressing all types of distractions. It might be getting them outside and exposing them to a bunny rabbit or a kid on a bike, or, you know, you have to ask your clients, and you as clients need to explain to your trainer what types of distractions does your dog have that we aren't addressing, so that we can make sure your dog is well-rounded and trained properly.
And the next one that we want to talk about is the supervised separation. What does that mean, and what does the test entail?
Supervised separation is by far the number one test that clients have the biggest problem with. It's not something that they're training for. Supervised separation is to have your dog do a sit or a down stay for 3 minutes while you're out of their sight. If dog training is not something that you're typically doing on a routine basis and you're only training stays for 30 seconds and putting their food bowl down, this is not one that your dog will be able to pass very easily. we have a lot of clients that will come in at least and ask me if they can just take the CGC test. And the first thing I will ask them is your dog capable of doing a 3-minute sit or down stay with you out of their sight? If they tell me yes, which is what they usually do, we try it, and their dog usually cannot do it. Therefore, you need to practice. The test demonstrates that a dog can be left with a trusted person if necessary and will maintain training and good manners. Evaluators are encouraged to say something like, would you like me to watch your dog? And then take a hold of the dog so the owner will go out of the sight of the dog for 3 minutes. That's where our training is a little different. Because I utilize the CGC as a way to test the dog's ability for service work and therapy work, I kind of expect the people to be able to leave their dog without an assistant holding their dog for the 3 minutes. So we strive for the best.
And you mentioned that you test them before they become service dogs or therapy dogs. I know we get a lot of comments and inquiries through our website about people that are interested in having their dogs become a therapy dog. Why do a lot of places, us included, test for that temperament before we enter them in a working dog program?
Well, because it shows that you as the dog's handler and the dog have an idea of how the dog should or should not behave in public. It is a good standardized stepping stone type of a test. It's a great way to start. And, you know, Robert, we go round and round with the ADA and other groups out there because service dog certifications aren't regulated, and there's a lot of people that have service dogs that have only train them themselves or not train them at all and just put a vest on them and call them a service dog. I would implore those people to at least take a CGC class so that you can learn how to properly walk your dog, how to deal with greeting and how to deal with distractions and how to deal with I have to leave my dog for a moment and those types of situations.
So I know that CGC classes and tests are held throughout the country, possibly throughout the world. Obviously, we're not the only CGC Canine Good Citizen evaluators in Denver. How do people find a test in their local area?
Well, actually, I had a client come in today and was looking for a Canine Good Citizen evaluator and training facility in Denver, and we actually were the only ones that came up, and I know for sure that there are more people out there. So I'm not sure if the AKC has a glitch in their site or not, but we are listed as the number one trainers to contact in Denver for AKC CGC training and testing. All they need to do is go to www.akc.org and look up Canine Good Citizen, and they will be able to go into the search bar and find a location near to them. If they have trouble with that, they can contact us through our website, www.denverdogworks.com, and we'd be happy to help assist them find a trainer in their area.
So when people sign up for this test, and you say that a lot of folks come in and they want to take the test right away, and they either pass or they fail, is this something that you can do just with one dog, or do you need a group setting?
You cannot take an AKC mandated test with one dog. You do need to have at least two dogs in the class. The reason being is because you do need to have a reaction to another dog. It's test number 8. It does not have to necessarily be a dog currently taking the class, but it should be a dog that is not necessarily already passed CGC.
So typically it is a group setting of several dogs. Is there an age limit per group, or can we have puppies all the way through adults?
CGC, Canine Good Citizen, is geared for dogs that are 6 months and older. They do not have to be AKC registered breeds. They can be purebreds, they can be mixes, they can be mutts, they can be designer breeds, they can be from the pound, they can be from the shelter. That has no bearing on your dog being able to take this course. AKC Puppy Star, S period, T period, A period, R period, is for puppies between the ages of 8 weeks and 6 months. It is a slightly different program. It is more involved in teaching the owner about proper puppy care, crate training, shots, leash training, how to pick up after them properly. Being responsible pet owners is what AKC Puppy Star is more geared to, introduction of the leash, and a few of the things that we've already discussed on our test.
So, guys, we're going to take a quick break. We're actually waiting for somebody to call in from a company called Rough Grip. They're based in Massachusetts, and I think that they have gotten hung up and having some difficulties calling. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and hopefully they are able to call in by then. If not, we're going to continue on with the show. We're talking about Canine Good Citizen. I know Michelle has to run back in the back and take care of one of the puppies real quick, so we're going to make sure she gets to be able to do that. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so hang on. We'll be right there.
Are you looking for a career you will love? Do you want to be the best? DogWorks Training Centers has business opportunities in your area. Give us a call at 303-578-9881. We have the best and train the rest.
Whether you're a Schnauzer Shakespeare or a Hound Dog's Hemingway in the making, perk up your ears. DogWorks Radio is teaming up with animal chaplain Sid Corfee, author of the award-winning book, Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, in presenting the Petlitzer Prize Contest, the pet-related writer's Pulitzer. Animal lovers can showcase their creative writing abilities for nifty awards and for the chance to have their works read live on DogWorks Radio. Categories range from poetry to short stories to persuasive essays and more. For more information, visit the blog page at www.goodgriefpetloss.com and click on the Petlitzer Prize link.
DogWorks Radio and Mush You Huskies is fueled by Native Performance Dog Food. If you want the best for your canine athlete or working dog, we recommend Native Performance Dog Food. Available at DogWorks Training Centers. Call 303-578-9881 for more information. Native Performance Dog Food.
Hima Neke and Robert Forto are training for the Iditarod and are looking for corporate and individual sponsors to help chase this dream. Running the race is the easy part. Proper year-round care can cost upwards of $30,000. From feeding, vet care, travel to races and more, we give the dogs the best. There are several sponsorship levels to choose from. Check out our website at HimaNeke.com. We will see you on the trail. Mosh, you Huskies! Gee-haw!
At Denver Dog Works, we offer a service dog training program for individuals nationwide. Each and every service dog that is trained through Denver Dog Works and Michelle Forto and her team has an individualized training plan. Michelle trains for autistic, mobility, medical alert, and psychiatric service work. In each case, the needs of the individual are met, and training of each dog is specialized for their handler's specific needs. It takes approximately 2 years to train a service dog and takes a tremendous amount of patience, handling, and work from everyone involved, including the family members of the service dog recipient. If you are interested in finding out more about our service dog training program, please visit our website at denverdogworks.com or give us a call at 303-578-9881.
You are listening to DogWorks Radio. We have the best and train the rest. Now back to the show.
And we are back. This is Robert Forto hosting from Willow, Alaska. And on the line, we have our co-host and the lead trainer at Denver DogWorks, Michelle Forto. Michelle, are you still there?
I am still here. I'm sorry. We have a 12-week-old Border Collie puppy staying for Camp Works, and she gets a little bit irritated in her crate once her treats come out of her Kong toy.
And there she goes again. So we're talking about Canine Good Citizen, and we've talked about taking your dogs into public, including Lowe's and Home Depot and other places that your city may allow them, and how to enroll and pass a Canine Good Citizen test, which is offered by the American Kennel Club. It's one of the few nationally recognized tests that dog owners can take for their regular old family pet to be a good citizen. So, Michelle, as a trainer, what is your definition of a canine good citizen? If somebody were to say, you know, I have a great trained dog, what are you looking for when people say that?
Well, what I'm looking for is less to do with the dog and more to do with them. I'm looking to make sure that they can control their dog in any situation, no matter what that may or may not be. A well-trained dog has an owner that pays attention to their surroundings and reacts to those surroundings and those happenings within those surroundings so that the dog doesn't have to.
So when they take this test and they receive their certification, it's a very nice diploma type certificate that they get from the AKC, as well as they can order a name tag and whatnot from the AKC. This is not something that is issued by the trainer. It is issued by the American Kennel Club, right?
That is correct.
And, you know, to explain the process a little bit, a lot of people think that their dog is going to be automatically tested and get a certificate and be on his way the same day. Explain the process with the AKC.
Well, when you take your test with your trainer will give you a form where you will fill out that you will be responsible for your pet, and then you will sign that form, you will turn it over, you will mail that form into the AKC with $8. The $8 is what pays for your paper certificate. You can also go online and order other things, like you mentioned, a patch. They've got bandanas, they've got dog tags that say Canine Good Citizen, they have pins, they have all kinds of things that say, you know, your dog is a Canine Good Citizen. It really doesn't mean anything except you are announcing to the world that your dog and yourself went through this program so that you can learn how to properly handle your dog in public places.
Now, I understand that some homeowners insurance companies offer a deductible or a discount, a discount for dogs that have gone through programs like this. Do you know anything about that?
I have heard of that, but I don't know of any of my particular clients that have actually sought after getting that discount, and I don't know which companies are offering it. I think it was Geico for a while, but sometimes it's not even through the homeowner's insurance. I know a few municipalities around will give a discount on your dog's tags and licenses if you can show that they have been spayed or neutered and have gone through a CCC program. There are a few homeowners in associations for neighborhoods, apartments, and condos especially, that may offer discounts if you have taken your dog through that program. And that's how they are trying to recognize that the program is good enough so that everyone who is cohabitating with a dog in a common setting is able to know that, you know, my neighbor's dog went through CGC too, or they can't live here, so I know that the dog is well-behaved and healthy.
So what's next after the pup or the dog goes through this good citizen program and he is now, you know, a highly decorated good citizen dog? What happens after that?
Well, you know, a lot of our clients, because we train for working breeds and sporting classes, will go on to something more advanced. A lot of people won't. They just are, that's all the training they've wanted to do, and they're done, and they're happy with their dogs. Some people need further classes. Some people don't. They're satisfied where they are, and they know that training with your dog is a lifetime thing. It's not just something you do for 6 or 8 weeks, and you're done. Training with your dog should go on for that dog's lifetime. It's just like putting your child in kindergarten. Just because they do 1 year of school, you know you're not done with their education. So would you stop them going to school at 5 years old? Of course not. You would continue to put them in school. I don't understand why people don't look at it that way for their dogs, quite honestly.
We're talking to Michelle Forto, the lead trainer of Denver Dog Works, and of course the co-host of our show. We're kind of giving some time up today. We're supposed to have a guest call in, but I think that they're having some issues making the call. So we're just going to continue on. But for guys that are listening, if you like what you hear, make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in Dog Works Radio in the search bar and it will pop up. If you do like what you hear, make sure you hit that follow button on the blogtalkradio.com/dogworks, and you will get a reminder every week of when the show is going to air. They get a reminder about an hour before. And lately, we've been talking to a lot of folks during the week. You know, a lot of people have work schedules and whatnot, and they aren't able to record on the weekends. So we've been even doing some extra shows in the middle of the week with several guests. So we don't always just have shows on Sundays. Now, they are available through archive on blogtalkradio.com as well as on iTunes. Just, again, search for Dog Works Radio on any of those sites or through the internet, and it will pull up any of our websites or links to our shows. Michelle, what else would you like to mention today while we're just kind of biding time, just kind of an easy, laid-back show here on Dog Works Radio?
Well, since you were going to speak with this person who provided you with this leash, why don't you discuss the leash a little bit and what you thought of it? I understand it's called Ruff Leash, R-U-F-F Leash.
It's actually called Rough Grip. It's a company based in Massachusetts, and I don't want to steal their thunder. I want to make sure that they have their own show if they're able to call in another time. So we're going to save that for another time to make sure that they can talk about all of the benefits of their leashes. Their company is called Rough Grip at roughgrip.com, and they have all sorts of different products, leashes and those collapsible water bowls and collars and all that sort of stuff. So in the next few minutes, Michelle, let's talk a little bit about some other classes that we offer that some other trainers are kind of getting in the, you know, the idea of offering, but, you know, thinking outside the box a little bit, outside of basic obedience or puppy classes. How do we do things a little bit differently at Denver Dog Works with some of the classes that we do offer?
Well, one of our premier classes that no one offers that you and I developed, probably 10 years ago, is called Peak Performance. And Peak Performance is a class that encompasses 2 to 4 different types of training for your dog. It's kind of an introduction into, let's say, you want to do some basic obedience, but you want to try tracking with your dog, but you're not sure your dog will like it, so you want to try a program and introduce your dog to tracking. So what we would do is we would brush up on the obedience, and then we would introduce a few of the tracking commands and techniques and things like that, and see if you and your dog liked it. Because sometimes, especially with agility, we have a lot of people that will call me and say, I have this dog and it's an agility dog, so I want to do agility. And I have to put the brakes on and say, whoa, just because your dog is an agility dog doesn't necessarily mean that it wants to do agility. For some reason, every border collie owner out there thinks that their dog can and should and will do agility. That's just not the case, as you and I have experienced. It's not necessarily for all dogs. So we always have recommended Peak Performance so that you can give your dog a chance to try it in a positive way, so that there's no fear, no anxiety, no stress to perform. That way they can really see if it is something that they would like to do with you. And it also gives you the opportunity to see if it is something that you would like to do. Tracking is a sport that not a lot of people are familiar with. A lot of people use tracking as a stepping stone into search and rescue and a way to keep their dog practicing how to find objects.
And you mentioned that they can have 2 or 3 or 4 different disciplines. Is this something that takes, you know, 6 months to a year to do, or is this, you know, 3 or 4 week sessions per discipline?
Peak Performance is typically done in 6, 8 and 12 week programs, because it is just an introduction, and the programs vary on the choices that you're making. Sometimes we have clients that want to do level 1 protection, which is deterring barking and standing my ground. And we've done that in a peak performance class where we've taken 3 or 4 weeks of basic obedience, make sure the person has good control over their dog, and then we will do 5-6 sessions of level 1 protection. And that class is very successful for our agitator, Kyle, and yourself, because it does encompass and ensure that the people have control over their dogs. Sometimes I've done CGC and level 1 protection with a client. Sometimes I will do peak performance with a board and train, where we do, especially with my puppies, what we'll do is we'll do 8 weeks of private lessons with a board and train in the middle. So you'll do 4 weeks of private lessons, do a 3 or 4 week board and train in the middle of that, and then finish up your 4 private lessons again. That one is highly successful for our puppies.
So we're talking about peak performance training at Denver Dog Works, and we do classes outside of Denver. We have a national training type program where dogs can come into Denver Dog Works via air, or we can pick them up, or all sorts of other different ways that we can train your dog. So how do people get in contact with us, Michelle, if they're interested in designing a program for their dog and they live out of state? Do they come in for an evaluation? Can we do it online? How does that take place, Michelle?
Well, I'd like them to do it online, and then we can give them a call. They can call us. They can email us directly. Out-of-state clients are not a problem. Typically, our out-of-state clients are choosing to do our Camp Works program, but as we expand, I've got clients that are, you know, the other day I had somebody say, hey, you guys are in Alaska too. I'm traveling there, and I want to take my pet with me, but there's going to be some things that I'm doing that is not appropriate for my pet to join me. Can my pet do a 1 or 2 week board and train with you so that they can do some things as well and enjoy their vacation while I'm enjoying my vacation? And I say, absolutely, you can do that. That is one thing that one reason why we opened up Alaska Dog Works, which is a sister company to Denver Dog Works, so that people could feel like, oh, I'm going to take my pet, but I don't want to leave it on the cruise ship, or I don't want to have to put it in a kennel, or I don't want to have to find out when I get there that the tour company doesn't allow me to have my dog along with me, but everywhere else I had was going, I was able to have my dog along with me. So that's a program that we're developing up there. You know, people don't necessarily need a hardcore camping trip for their dogs. They just might need their dog, you know, well taken care of, trained, walked, given enrichment activities and things like that while they're on vacation.
So when you talk about Camp Works, a lot of people mention that when they're talking about a board and train. What is a board and train, and how are those successful for training your average, you know, just everyday pet dog?
Well, we don't recommend board and trains for everyone. We kind of determine if you even qualify for it. A board and train for a client that needs to learn how to handle their dog should not be doing a board and train. A board and train for a client that is traveling out of town for an extended period of time is a perfect idea. A board and train for a client that is having trouble managing their dog, it's a good idea. A person that wants to give their dog a good start, like my last client, Bobby, a little Jack Russell Terrier puppy, his owner purchased him from Virginia, called me the same day, and scheduled his board and train to start 3 days after he arrived here in Denver. He was an awesome little dog. I get to see him tonight, actually, and I'm excited about that because she was an owner that said, I'm getting this puppy. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to do a board and train with him. Michelle's going to make sure he's crate trained, potties on command, learns how to walk on a loose leash, comes when called, learns how to play fetch, interacts and socializes properly with other dogs because Michelle knows how to handle the fear period and so on and so forth. So for her, it worked out wonderfully, and we have a lot of clients that will do that. And that seems to be more of a trend nowadays than I've ever seen before, where I actually have clients call me either the day before they decide to go purchase a puppy or the day after, and they say, you know what, I think we want to get this started off on the right foot.
So, Michelle, we have our guest calling in. We had some difficulties with our toll-free number. I believe I even gave her the wrong extension. So, calling in from Massachusetts, without further delay, we have Leslie Monroe calling in from roughgrip.com. Leslie, are you there?
I'm here finally. Sorry about that. Thanks for having me on finally.
No problem. That's how it is in the social media world. We can answer email and everything as we're on the air. So I'm glad that you were able to join us. No problem on calling in late. I do appreciate you taking the time out of your day. So let's talk about your company, Rough Grip. I know you sent me out a sample a couple of weeks ago, and I was fortunate enough to be able to use it, and I have to tell you, without much hesitation, I have to say that's one heck of a leash. So you guys have one great product there. What do you guys do there at Rough Grip? Is it Rough Grip Leashes? What is your company exactly?
Well, it's actually Monroe Enterprises Incorporated, but that was the brand name. Rough Grip Dog Leash is what it used to be, and that was just the brand that everyone associated with us. So we weren't Monroe Enterprises, we were like the Rough Grip Dog Leash Company. So it's really a brand name for that dog leash and all the other equipment that's made out of that material.
Okay, all right. So, you know, there's thousands of leashes out there available, and on your website it will say this is one of the best leashes you will ever own. What separates your product from something that they can buy just from the corner store?
Well, it's the grip on it, because it's made with rubber-woven nylon webbing, say that fast three times, and the grip on it is easy on your hand. You're not clenching it like you would. If your dog gets strong, and huskies are perfect, those are my people. They're just bred to pull, so they pull on
right.
Their owner's leash, and to have to hold something really tight, or people that have arthritis, it's just a matter of, it doesn't ever slip out of your hands, you know? It just holds tight. You don't have to grip it so tightly, so you're not getting... You don't wrap it around your fingers. You don't get purple fingers. You don't get rope burns. Somebody said they actually wanted the leash to slide a little more to do some kind of work they were doing with their dog, and they're like, this thing is never going to slide. I said, no, it's not supposed to slide. That's the point, because at one point I had 270 pounds of German Shepherd, and I'm 5'1", and I was about 115 pounds. And when they saw a squirrel, it really got interesting. So I had all these leashes wrapped around. My fingers are purple, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, there's got to be – I was like the kite tail, you know, to the pack. So
right.
I was thinking, I need a little advantage, and the horse I was riding was also a big, huge thing, and I'm a shrimp. Don't even ask me why I get myself into these things. But he broke the reins that were made out of that material, and I went, oh, huh, wonder if this will work. Because those reins never came out of your hand, so the horse could never get the bit and throw his head down, and I thought, and I turned him into – a dog leash, and I could pull my 100-pound German Shepherd off her front feet, you know, in a nice way, not an abusive way, but I could lift up, and she couldn't go anywhere. So her feet would be up in the air, and I'd still be standing there smiling, going, yep, this is good. I like this. Control. It's always nice.
Right, right.
It works in anything. Rain, it works in Alaska. They've used it up there. They've used it in Iraq in 135 degrees. It doesn't get soft, squishy. Works in Florida. You know, it works anywhere.
So it is your everyday leash. I know if you go over to any dog owner's house, they'll have, you know, a leash for the rain, a leash for, you know, an easy walk, and a retractable leash. You know, they'll have a whole rack of leashes hanging up by the door there.
Right.
But the Rough Grip leash is really an everyday leash that you can use just about any occasion, right?
Anytime. Yep. People, I don't use any other ones now, and I sell other ones because people like them. But I end up going back. I try out new leashes people send me, and I just never find that's the most comfortable one. If you work with a dog 8 hours a day, that's the best one to be on. And it's got a nice padded handle. And I just, I don't do any other ones. It has water buffalo leather. We call it buffalo leather. And that's really water resistant, too. So I don't worry so much about it getting wet or anything like that. I have ones from 9 years ago, and they're still fine. So that was what one woman said. She said, the only problem I see with your product is you're not going to sell as many as you could if they wore out.
Well, that's okay, and I know you stand behind your product. You said, I believe you said in an email to me that out of all of the years that you've been in business, you've only had just a couple that have been returned. You offer a very generous return policy. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
If you don't like the leash, send it back. That's what I say. I don't mind. I return your money. There's no problem. Usually they'll tell me why. And there was just one woman, she had arthritis that was so bad, she said, I can't even grip onto this. I was hoping. So that was one that came back. Another one, I don't even remember why that one came back, to tell you the truth. But, yeah, there was two or three in 12 years. So I went, oh, great.
That's a heck of a product. If you can have just two or three leashes returned after all of that time, I think that you have a great product there. We're talking to Leslie Monroe, calling in from Massachusetts. Her website is roughgrip.com, and she's available on Facebook and I believe Twitter, too. Do you have a Twitter account at Rough
No,
Grip?
I don't have a Twitter account yet. I'm pondering it.
It's one of those things, once you get into it, you're stuck for life. It's one of those mere social media addictions that we all have. Also, on your website, you offer some pretty nice collars, and we've used for years on our working dog. He is a German Shepherd. He's a three-year-old German Shepherd imported from Slovakia, Western German lines. He has one of those combo slip collars. And I know that you guys offer those. Very few companies offer that type of collar. Can you tell us a little bit about that combo slip collar?
Those are standard collars and slip leads, and they're together, and they have two rings at the end. So you can actually attach to either ring, and you either have a standard collar, or if you need a little bit more control, then you clip it onto the other ring, which would turn it into a slip collar. I've used those on my dogs for years, just in case I go to the vet with three huge German Shepherds. I like a slip collar on one or two of them, and then otherwise, if there's nothing excitable going on, we just go with the standard collar. But I love them. I tried one a long time ago, and I loved them. And I thought, ooh, these in Buffalo would be nice because I like to have my own materials for my own products. I make my own products for myself.
Oh, so you hand make these collars then?
Oh, no, they're handmade, but I have them manufactured over in India.
Okay. Yeah, I love those combo collars because, like you said, it has that dead ring that you can attach the leash to, so there isn't any constriction or anything when you're just doing basic exercises with your dog. And then, of course, you can attach it to the slip ring if you're working on heel or some other type of obedience. I think that's a great product to have.
Puppies like to slip their heads backwards, They pull their heads backwards out of the leashes and stuff. Sometimes you get a young dog, he's doing his tricky thing, and he'll just back up, and the collar comes off, and you're like, oh, whoops.
Right.
So that's when I use it, too, just at first training and stuff like that.
On your website, you had mentioned that you have the Rough Grip Leash, which is, of course, your banner product, but you do also offer a whole variety of traffic leads, and those leads I have found work very well in particular situations. I have found that they work great with service dogs and therapy dogs and when you're working with your dog in tight quarters. How do you find how does a client find the appropriate leash for the work that they're doing with the dog? Because it's not always just a 6 or an 8 foot leash that they need. They may need a much shorter leash like a traffic lead.
Right. Well, if somebody has a lot of people who have kennels who just need to move dogs around or vets, people who have, they're moving dogs and they're moving them from crate here and there, they'll use those. There's people in big cities, New York, Singapore, and they use them because there's so many people on the street. They don't want the dog even getting away from them to bang into somebody. So that's how it started is people were like, can you make a foot long one? Can you do this? Can you... Like, I never really thought about it. I never thought about having to move dogs in New York City. So I made them. I sent them out to a few people who requested them. I said, try them out and tell me, should I make something different? Do you like these? Is this what you're talking about? And that's pretty much how it happened. So I found out the kennel people were the ones using it. People like you would use it, people that are hooking up dogs. It's just like one of those convenience things where you don't need a lot of leash, but you need to move the dog from point A to point B without it having a lot of movement, you know?
Right, and we use them often in mushing or dog sledding, as we'll hook up the lead dog or, you know, a couple of the dogs throughout the team, and we'll take them up into the team on one of these short traffic leads and actually lead them out, you know, into the starting gate or wherever into the, you know, the training trail by this traffic lead. Then it's just very easy to take off and throw to the side versus having a very long 6, 8 foot, 10 foot leash that you have to deal with and worry about tangles. But I'd like to ask Michelle a question. Michelle, are you still there?
I am.
I'm still.
Hi.
I want to find out, you know, with Leslie's products, we're talking to Leslie Monroe of RoughGrip.com. What do a lot of clients ask for when they're coming to you and asking for a particular leash? What are you recommending in terms of product, not product, but features, I guess?
Well, I've always liked the rolled leather collars with, you know, the option to do slip or regular collar. Those are probably by far my most favorite. But what I'd like to mention is that when clients come in, you'd be surprised how many people are just so overwhelmed by the number of products and choices out there, both on the internet and at the big stores, and they don't know what they should be purchasing, how to make it work, why it's not working for them and their dog. I mean, it's just one thing after another. And usually what I do is I have to teach them how to use the product that they've chosen. A lot of times people are choosing retractable leashes. That's number one, by far, hands down, the most worst, awful design ever for controlling your dog. It's just not going to happen. So I'm happy to hear about this product. Hopefully I can get some in to our main training center here in Denver so that I can showcase them for my clients, because a lot of times it just simply comes down to I don't know what I'm supposed to buy. My friend recommended I do the head halty. My vet said to use a harness. My other friend said to use an easy walker. My parents said to use a pinch collar. Nobody knows. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, so a lot of times it's just education.
That's a great point that you made there, Michelle, because so many people have all these things that they want to be able to use. And it's just like buying a new car. You know, the car salesman will tell you you need undercoating and rust proofing and all these, you know, fancy things, but you don't necessarily need that. I'm a big proponent of simple. You know, just your basic collar and your basic leash will work out just fine. So, Leslie, what do you think about that when people are calling you and asking you, hey, this is what so-and-so recommended I buy. Why should I buy your product?
I know, huh? And I always feel bad because I don't want to trash anybody else's product, but if you see those rope burns going across your palm or you have a 165-pound Mastiff, a retractable is not going to work. A harness isn't going to work. You know, you need to have a leash and you need to have a little control with your leash, with your dog, period, no matter what size he is. So I get kind of, well, just try it. See, that's what I do, because I know I'll take it back if you don't want it. Just try it, and if you hate it, send it back to me. If it doesn't work, send it back to me, and I don't get them back. So that's kind of my ploy, because I don't really want to go after somebody else's product. But, boy, I'll tell you, that thing can take off a finger, those retractable things, huh, Michelle?
Well, you know, we have a large park here in Denver metro area, like I'm sure every metro area does. But in this park particular, it's called Washington Park. We call it Wash Park for short. And there's a biking trail where you can bike, you can rollerblade, you can run with your jogging strollers and whatnot. And I've seen it time and time again. People will run across the street with their dogs or even get out of their cars with their dogs and park and ride across that trail with the dog on a retractable leash. Well, the dog's already across the trail, and so is that rope for that retractable leash. And I've seen taken out on their bicycles.
Oh,
it can become quite dangerous for the people. But not only that, I mean, even in a neighborhood setting, my parents live on a corner, and there's, you know, like 150 feet of fencing on their corner. And we'll have people that walk along with their dog on a retractable, and my mom has stopped having her dogs in her front yard with her while she's gardening in her flower garden, because she's had dogs come around the corner on retractable leashes and literally attack her and her dogs. And the owner comes around the corner and goes, "What are you doing to my dog?"
I've seen that too.
Right. And that's my problem with those leashes. Now, if you want to put one in your pocket and go to the park and sit on a bench and put your dog on that so it can run around and do things, great. But stay off of the trails and keep your dog in control when you're in a neighborhood. You know,
the only reason I use those is when it's a puppy, an 8-week puppy, a 10-week puppy, so I can keep track of it at the end of that long thing. But it doesn't take any strength to stop the puppy. You know, otherwise, those just aren't good. They just,
you know,
that cord is terrible.
I don't even like them for puppies because I've seen people, you know, they didn't necessarily mean to, or the retractable leash retracted on its own type thing, or they dropped it. Puppies go flying across the room, you know, or flying across the park. And it's a bad thing. The worst. And I'm not knocking this brand or anything, but the worst thing you can do is have a retractable leash and be using a pinch collar or a prong collar. You are seriously going to hurt your dog. Those are two pieces of equipment that do not work well together.
Oh.
It's again what I'm trying to say is it comes down to education. So I think that your leashes and your collars and things are great because they work well together, and it's kind of a fail safe. I mean, people put the collar on, they put the leash on, they can't really, you know, mess it up. It's going to work for them, and that's why Robert Monroe bought us.
We're talking to Leslie Monroe, calling in from Massachusetts. Her company is roughgrip.com. Wonderful website. I've got it pulled up right now. Very easy to find, very easy to navigate. And before we go, Leslie, I don't know exactly how much time we have left, but I want to ask you about some of your other products that you offer. You sent me a kind of like a dealer catalog. What are some of the other things you offer as well?
Well, one of our favorite things is the grab tabs, which might be something like somebody like you would use to have the dogs, because it's just a little piece, 8-inch long piece of rough grip material. You can grab onto it really quick, but it doesn't – I don't like the traffic leads on them to grab onto them in a park because they get their foot stuck through them. So I made straight ones, and it's that grippy stuff. So as they run by, you don't have to grab a collar or anything. You can grab the grab tab.
Right.
And that is just the most convenient thing, like at dog parks and stuff like that. I sell so many of those, even for training, off-leash training, so that, you know, the guys that do Schutzen have something to sort of direct their dogs, or they do agility, and they direct their dogs with that when they're off course. So that's one of our big ones. And a funny thing is people are calling me and asking me what kind of leash I had that the dog couldn't chew through. And they thought maybe this one they couldn't. I said, except for chain, I don't know any dog leash that a dog, and I wouldn't even chain. I think maybe some dogs I know could actually get through a chain. So I just made a chew guard for them out of rubber. So when they were training the puppies, they'd say, all of a sudden I looked and I had the leash, but the puppy was way over there because he had chewed on the rubber stuff. So I made him a chew guard that you wrap around and it just attaches with Velcro to give them something to gnaw on instead of your leash until they're trained. And then the agility people use that as a reward. A lot of them, too, like to string it between their two hands, so the dog can jump up and bite. They usually bite the leash. And me, I like my tack to last for a long time. I don't like to replace stuff. So I made that. That went over really well. I was surprised at how many we were selling of those just by themselves. People were buying 2-3 at a time. So there must be some good chewers out there. And then we have braided leashes. There's a lot of people who like braided leashes. I still keep going back to the rough grip. But it's got leather and it's braided. Each strand of leather is braided around a cord. So instead of the braided leashes that would come apart if one piece got worn through or the dog bit it, this actually has a cord through every strand, and I think there's 5 or 6 strands, and then those are all braided together. So people like those just because I kind of make industrial strength products. I'm a person that rides horses. When you buy a saddle, you pay $2,000 and you make sure your saddle lasts for a nice 15 years. Because it's an investment. So that's what I think of products for dogs. Should be an investment, not a disposable thing. So everything I design, I try to design it something I would want. That's really tough, that you're not going to lose your dog. I hate the losing the dog thing when you're chasing after a dog. So I try to alleviate that with the products. I'm trying to think of what else there are. There are traffic leads that are leather. I just call them handles, rough grip handles. And then there's a braided handle, a braided grab tab that's really quite big and substantial that hangs down for the bigger dogs. I think that is
you have some pretty cool bandanas on there. I know a lot of people like to dress their dogs up these days, and you have some cool looking tie-dye ones and some interesting patterns there. So, and those are relatively cheap. What are they? $6.50, I believe, on your website.
Yeah, I think that's
$5.50. $5.50 on the website. Just something quick to give your dog some style, I guess.
Right.
But the last thing I want to mention, Leslie, we have about 4 minutes left, is you mentioned that these dogs can withstand extremes, everything from, the weather we have up here in Alaska, 30 below, all the way up to well over 100. And you said that some of the dogs in Iraq, I guess they're the working military dogs, have used your leashes. You know, that's a great testimonial. Can you tell us a little bit more about those working dogs over there with our troops?
Yeah, I actually have my boyfriend works over there. He's one of the project managers for an airstrip that they put in. Right now it was in Shindan in Afghanistan. He was in Iraq, and there's people called, they're OSSI, they're security teams that do bomb sniffing and general security. So he ended up meeting them, and they ended up taking a whole lot of leashes and using them over there. And I said, well, tell me, are they melting? Because they've never used an 135 before, and they have that silt that gets stuck in everything, the brownouts they call them. And they said they held up. They couldn't believe how well they held up, that they were just, they said they never got sticky. No matter how much dirt got in them, they still had a grip, and they held. They were nice and strong. So I got the ring endorsement and a shirt from the group of guys. And, yeah, it was great. It was a nice test and testimonial to the fact that these go through any kind of weather, and they still work. They always have a good grip. And they never get sticky. You know how some things like rubber will get that melty
right
feeling? It just doesn't happen.
So, you know, like you said, that's a heck of a testimonial to have. And for our listeners, if a leash can withstand the rigors of Iraq or the rigors of a sled dog kennel like we're using in Amman up here, that's something you guys need to buy. Instead of running down there to the big box store and buying, the cheap $5 leash that your dog will probably chew through this weekend, invest in something of quality like these rough grip leashes. And I'm looking on your website right now. The rough grip leash, 6'5" wide, is only $29.99. That's not a bad price to pay for something that's going to be as tough as we mentioned here on the show today. Leslie, anything else you would like to mention before we close?
No, but thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, and I'll make sure I send over a link of the show. We talked in the first segment about Canine Good Citizen and how important that is with dogs. So you'll have the full show, and you can do with it as you wish. And make sure
that you paste
on your Facebook or whatever you like. We're talking to Leslie Monroe of RoughGrip.com, and it's one heck of a leash, guys. You need to check out this website. Very easy to navigate. Very easy to order from. And Leslie, anything else?
Nope, I think that's it.
Thank you very much. We'll definitely stay in touch. We're going to talk to you off air by email or whatever about getting some of your guys' products at our training center in Denver for sure. So we'll definitely be in touch. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Michelle, anything else you want to add to run out the show?
No, I just want to tease that Mushu Huskies should be starting up very soon. I am excited. I know that you are also starting to reintroduce your blog on the 31 Days of Horror. I noticed that that's coming on a little early this year. So I thought that we might advance that and include 31 Days of Horror on the Dog Works radio show. And try to include 31 Days of Horror with dogs that are in horror movies.
You know, we do everything here at Denver Dog Works. We are huge scary movie fans. That's what she's talking about. So we do that, and we'll make sure that we pass that word along. So with that, we have about 10 seconds left. I want to make sure that you guys join us on Sunday. We're talking to Martin Hubbard of Blanket ID. That will be a show you don't want to miss. It will be 2 o'clock Eastern time. So on behalf of Michelle and Robert and our guest Leslie Monroe of RoughGrip.com, this is Dog Works Radio. We will talk to you guys next time. Never forget your dreams. Goodbye.